Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
The Pet Doctor is brought to you by Dog.com. For everything and anything dog, shop Dog.com today for all the top brands. Greenies, Frontline, Kong, Nylabone, Royal Canin, and more. Shop at Dog.com and use the promo code SADDOC, S-A-D-D-O-C, and get $15 off your order of $75 or more.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Your veterinarian's education doesn't stop when he or she graduates from veterinary school. When I graduated from UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, we were told that 50% of what we learned was going to be outdated and wrong in 10 years. Our task was to determine which 50%. A marvelous way for veterinarians to stay current is with state conventions. Some of the brightest researchers, clinicians, and professionals update veterinarians on the latest discoveries and trends. The exhibit halls are another fabulous avenue of learning what products can help our clients and patients experience a better health span. This podcast comes to you from the California Veterinary Medical Association annual PACVET conference held in San Francisco, California. You'll learn what's new in dental care, pet insurance, allergies, fleas, and lasers. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
There's a movement afoot. ShoeBuy.com. Join the millions of people who shop ShoeBuy.com's over 400 brands and 500,000 products. Order now and get free shipping and free return shipping. ShoeBuy.com, the world's greatest shoe store.
Walk your dog in style and comfort. Enter the code DOCTOR, D-O-C-T-O-R, at checkout and get a 10% discount plus free shipping at ShoeBuy.com.
Love your pets but wish their medications were a lot less expensive? They are at 1-800-PETMEDS. You'll not only save on flea and heartworm medications, but on prescriptions for arthritis, incontinence, thyroid, and more. And you get fast service, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, our licensed pharmacists ensure accuracy, monitor drug interaction, and more. See why over 5 million people have trusted their pet's health to 1-800-PETMEDS, America's largest pet pharmacy. Call now or order online.
Go to PetMeds.com/doctor, D-O-C-T-O-R, to get 10% off any order and free shipping on orders of $39 or more at PetMeds.com.
FTD's network of over 40,000 florists around the world have been creating beautiful handcrafted arrangements for 100 years. Each arrangement is delivered the same day and backed by FTD's 7-day satisfaction guarantee. For a century, people have trusted their most important occasions to the flower experts at FTD.
Since Pet Life Radio is all about puppy dogs and flowers, our listeners, that's you, can get a 20% discount on your order. Just go to florop.com and use the code DOCTOR20 at checkout. FLEUROP.com, code word DOCTOR and the number 20.
That's it. You're madder than a junkyard dog, and you're not going to take it anymore. Your feathers are ruffled, your dander is up, and you've got a definite bone to pick. Join us each week on Pet Peeves, the show that lets you dig through the dirt and unleash your passion for pets. Your host, pet expert, and award-winning author, Amy Shojai, will talk about what makes you howl and what hisses you off. Pet Peeves, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
All right, so this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and I am here with Dr. Shola Alava, and he is with Veterinary Allergy Reference Lab, also known as VARL. And being a Southern California vet, and I know this can be worldwide, allergies. Pets will show up to me itching, biting, scratching. They say, Doc, it doesn't have any fleas. So one of the most common reasons for itching is allergies.
Yes.
How common is it, Dr. Shola?
Well, let's put it this way. The skin of the pet is a very highly immunological organ, unlike for us humans. For us humans, the nasal, pharyngeal, bronchial area, alveolar, is the place where we get sensitized to allergies.
So we breathe them in.
We breathe them in. For pets, they absorb it mostly through the skin.
Interesting.
And that way, so people try to associate certain allergies to pollinating periods my pet has allergy to this and that because of their pollinating at that time. Not necessarily so. It could be because the pollens, for us humans it is, but for pets it is not.
So it doesn't have to be as seasonal as it
at
will
all,
be for us?
At all, because we have to inhale our allergens to be sensitized. For pets, the pollens fall on the ground, on the grasses, patios, sidewalks, and they remain on those surfaces for months after the pollinating period. The pets go lay down on them and get sensitized. This is why you find that pets, one of the major signs of allergy in pets is poor chewing.
Constantly.
And that is why, because they walk on those pollens. They go for a walk, they come back, and they are itching like crazy, chewing their paw like crazy. It's because of those pollens on the sidewalks or in the grasses.
So I'm just learning. I've typically said it's a sign of inhaled allergies. Mm-hmm. Why they're chewing on their paws, it's really walking on it allergies.
Or laying on it.
Okay.
Because they absorb them through the skin.
So that's why their tummies oftentimes will get it.
Their whole, their dorsal area will get really red.
Mm-hmm.
Alopecia, sets in. It's not necessarily always fleas. Fleas have certain, defined areas where the FAD, you take one look and say, oh, it is an FAD case. But with allergies, it's more diffuse.
So with these pets having allergies due to pollens, walking on it, sleeping on it, would it be helpful then when they bring the pet home to wipe their paws off or wipe the skin off?
Absolutely. It's one of the recommendations we give out every day, that the simple procedure of just wiping the pets, washing the pets off with little water and wiping it off.
Would baby wipes work?
It absolutely. It would do a lot of wonders to reduce the symptoms that the pets does manifest.
Now, some people want to soak the paws or, give them a bath. Now, I've heard that it actually opens up the skin and allows those allergens then to penetrate even further. Am I saying the right thing or wrong thing?
Well, I think overbathing is not good. But definitely bathing reduces the amount of allergen that remains on the skin. So, I think everything in moderation, but it is good to know that the pets absorb, get sensitized through the skin. That's very important for the pet owner to know, so that they don't think that it's just they're getting sensitized by inhalation, as we humans do.
So, Dr. Alava, we have a pet that has these allergies, and you're here with the Veterinary Allergy Reference Laboratory. What testing can be done to determine exactly what the pet's allergic to, and what can we do to stop the allergies?
Well,
We stop an allergy?
Well, we cannot. Allergy is a genetic disease. It will not go away, but it can be managed. And very importantly, to manage it, there are two options. you can go for a non-discriminatory therapy like prednisone or corticosteroid.
That has side effects.
That has right. Very nasty long-term use side effects, which we try to avoid. Or you can try to find out what exactly are the things causing allergies for the pets. And now you can immunize the pets or try to desensitize the pets to those specific things. Now you are doing direct immunotherapy, which is more specific because now what you do, you inject into the pet over a period of time the same things that have been shown to cause their allergies. And that can be found out by two methods, either by intradermal skin testing or by serum blood test.
I was a child and had the intradermal, and that was not a pleasant experience.
Oh, well, the blood test has a lot of advantages in the sense that you do not have to take the pet off their medication before they are tested.
Okay.
Whereas for intradermal skin test, you do have to withdraw the pets from those same medications that are supposed to keep them symptom-free. So pet owners, don't take very lightly to withdrawing the patient from those drugs that keep them comfortable. Now, but with the blood test, especially with our blood system, you can test the pet while on corticosteroid. As long as they have symptoms, IgEs that are causing the problems, that's are still there.
How effective, how successful are you at desensitizing that pet?
Well, that's first, once you've identified accurately the things causing the allergies for the pets, desensitizing them to those specific things become more almost mundane, because it is identifying the culprit allergens that is critical. It's like a child, you want to immunize a child against smallpox, but you are immunizing them with tuberculosis, tuberculin. You are not going to protect them against smallpox by immunizing them to tuberculin. It's the same thing with allergy. If a pet is allergic to Timothy grass, you want to desensitize them specifically to Timothy grass. If they're allergic to a particular mold, you want to desensitize them to that particular mold. Several years ago, our company, found out that actually pets can be allergic to their owners. And that was very...
That's shocking.
Yes, it is. Because for many years, we were the only company that had that test. But it's reasonable to understand that when we are very sensitive to to dog dander or cat dander, they are very powerful allergens for we humans.
And why couldn't it be vice versa?
Exactly. So it's interesting for an owner to find out that, geez, my pet is allergic to me.
That's a horrible thought.
That idea can make some, but we can desensitize the pet to that allergen.
All right, and now to desensitize them takes a matter of injections.
Yes.
And people go, I can't give a shot. Are they expected to do it?
Well, they are simple subcutaneous injections, similar to giving insulin to a diabetic. So they can be trained to do it. It's very simple. But if they don't want to, well, they can have an arrangement with their clinic to have it done at the clinic. What they pay for hospital visits and clinic visits and the injection.
I've had many a client who's gasped, and then they've done it going, oh, that wasn't that bad. My pet still loves me.
Yes, exactly.
And what's the success rate of desensitizing the pet?
In our system, we know that approximately 75 to 85% of the patients will do well if they follow the protocol that their vet gives to them. Because that's the critical thing, following that protocol. Very, very critical. If there's a modification that needs to be made for a particular pet, when their vet gives them those changes, they need to be followed to the letter.
Compliance is so
compliance
important.
Compliance is extremely important with allergy. It is the most frustrating thing for the pet owner, for the veterinarian, when there is no compliance. Because then the veterinarian doesn't have the basis on which to really make a decent program to proceed on. But if you follow the protocol that they give you, then the veterinarian knows, okay, then the next thing we'll try is this. Because he knows what the consequences of what schedule he had given you to follow.
So translate it, follow your doctor's directions if you want it to work.
Exactly.
Well, Dr. Alava, thank you very much. So I'm here right now with Dr. Alava of Veterinary Allergy Reference Laboratory. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and I'm at the California Veterinary Medical Association State Convention, and I've been chatting with various people as you've been listening to this podcast, and right now I'm talking with Dr. Julia Brannon. She is a veterinarian with Lily Alonco, and we're going to talk about fleas, because no matter where you are in the United States, except maybe Minnesota where it gets so cold, you're going to have some fleas. So, Dr. Brannon, thank you.
Thank you.
So, fleas, how common are they? Are they in Minnesota?
They are in Minnesota. They are everywhere because they're in our population. They're in our urban wildlife. There are fleas everywhere. We just don't realize it so much until they get into a whole little flea nest, and then we think we have a problem. But they really are all over the place.
I'll oftentimes have clients come in and say, oh, my pet can't have fleas. My cat is totally indoors.
Right. You know, I think one of the biggest misconceptions that people have is that if you have fleas, that your house is dirty or that your environment is dirty, and that's really not true. And unfortunately, I think that prohibits a lot of people from getting the kind of care that they need for their pets, because you have like one flea or two fleas on the dog that could jump on them, and then it's really, it gets into your environment, and there's a whole flea life cycle stage that's going on in people's homes that they don't even realize.
So tell us what that life cycle is, because I know it can be absolutely amazing. Once you see that one or two fleas on your pet, that is the tip of the iceberg. There's lots more.
I'm so glad that you said it, because that's exactly what it is. It is the tip of the iceberg. It's those one or two fleas who are laying 40 some odd eggs a day that roll off of them like a salt shaker and just distribute these eggs into the environment. And then the really creepy part is that when those things actually open up and they have a larva that looks sort of like a maggot, it's actually hanging around in your carpeting or in other areas where it's dark.
And or they sleep with you, then you have maggots that you're sleeping with.
It's kind of the way that it looks, yeah. And then they go through a pupa stage where they and into an encrusted little egg stage where they can actually remain in the environment for a year and a half. And so it isn't just what you see now. I mean, those things that could be erupting out given warm temperatures or humid environments, and we can have those, you know, all over the place, all over the country, and they can come out of, you know, their little cocoons and actually come into our environment and infect our dogs again, so, and our cats.
So oftentimes clients will tell me, well, if there was a flea in the house, I would know because I would get chewed on. And your response to that would be?
Usually they tend to center on one particular host, and so you'll see them more hanging around your dog or a particular cat. When the environment is really infested, that's when you're going to start noticing that you're going to get bitten by it. And I've had people who have said that they can, if they have the TV on, they can see fleas jumping. And I know, can you imagine just jumping and creating a whole little flea circus right there in front of the TV? I can't even imagine. So you don't ever want to get to that point, because in that case people would be being bitten. But it usually takes a pretty big infestation to have that happen, because they tend to prefer single hosts. I know.
Well, I've been a veterinarian long enough that I know it used to be that we'd have to have all these poisons that were out. So we'd be treating the house, treating the pet, putting the flea collar on, giving them the bath, putting the sprays all over. Everything just seemed and smelled toxic, and it didn't really seem to work.
Yeah.
So nowadays, fleas have gotten under control. And Lily Elanco has a product called Comfortis, which I think is marvelous, because instead of having to put a product on the pet, and a lot of people are concerned with that, it goes into the pet. It's a pill. Tell us how it works and why it's good to use.
So it actually is protein bound in the blood. So the fleas have to take a blood meal to absorb the medication, and they actually die really quickly, within 2 to 4 hours. So before they ever get to producing eggs and having those in the environment, they're dying. And it actually works on the nicotinic acetylcholine receptors specific to invertebrates. And so that's the beautiful thing, is that they can take in this medication, which is actually a byproduct of a naturally occurring bacteria, which is really lovely, and take it into their system, and it has a very long half-life, and that's what gets them 30 days of protection.
So it's an adulticide. It will actually kill the adult, versus some of the products that are out there is kind of like a flea birth control.
Right, exactly. And in some ways, I guess you could say it sort of is, just because they can't even lay eggs. You know, it kills them before they can actually lay eggs.
Now, that's very good birth control.
Yeah, exactly.
So what would you recommend for general flea control?
I think, you know, what we tell people is that it'll take, if you have a really active infestation, it will take 3 months to get that population under control. And so work with your veterinarian to find out what is the best way to get things under control as quickly as possible. And, you know, it may be that this is the best way to go, and it may be that there are other things that you can do in your environment to help get things under control. But it's so much better to prevent than it is to treat. So be proactive about it.
Should they do this just during the flea season or year-round?
No, ma'am. Year-round would be ideal for just that reason, you know, that there are fleas that are coming out of their eggs at various stages and depending on the different types of weather. I mean, it's better to do that and be proactive about it than to wait until you have a huge infestation, because then you don't have to use all those products and you don't have to spend all that money and you don't have to worry about being bitten and having fleas jumping in front of your TV.
Well, Dr. Julia Brannon from Lily Elanco with Comfortis, thank you very much. Do appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
At Petco, we really love pets. There isn't anything we won't do to make sure they're getting the best products and the best care. So when you ask us a question like,
"So how do you feel about cat condos?"
we can say from experience,
"Feels like home for her."
Enter the code DOCTOR10, DOCTOR, the number 10, and get 10% off any order. No minimum at Petco.com.
Hello?
Danica, where have you been?
Oh, Grandma, I've been busy, you know, racing, GoDaddy girl.
Oh, I built my own online store with GoDaddy.
Really? Let me see. GrandmasAuction.com. Hey, aren't those Grandpa's golf clubs?
Grandma needs her bingo money.
Use promo code DOCTOR10, DOCTOR, the number 10, and get a .com domain name for just $7.49 at GoDaddy.com.
You ask the question, what do I want? What do I need? I'll take affection. Irene should mention, I need time. I need love. I crave attention.
Love My Pets, the new single by Mark Winter, available on iTunes.
Welcome to Sassy Seniors, a show about our fabulous older dogs and cats. I'm your host, Kelly Jackson. You know, I wanted to create a show to really showcase our senior pets. And, you know, as the human population ages and lives longer, of course, so are our wonderful pets. But many of us with aging pets, it's so interesting. We have a tough time realizing or really admitting that they are seniors. So, in a way, I kind of like to think of our senior pets as wise puppies. What do you think about that? Be sure to join us for another edition of Sassy Seniors. And remember, celebrate your senior pets.
Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
I am here at the cutting edge laser technology booth at the CVMA convention with two of their representatives, one being Mike Kim and the other Brian Godert. And I have to admit, very sad to say, at my practice, I don't have lasers, but lasers are really up and coming, or they're here, and they really can be of major use in a veterinary practice. So what, Mike, number one, what are the various uses of lasers and what are the different types of lasers? Take us up the learning curve.
Thank you, Dr. Cruz. I'd be more than happy to answer that. Cutting-edge technologies, we are focused on light-based technologies in both surgery and therapeutic photodynamic or photostimulation for ailments such as wound healing, osteoarthritis, sprains and strains, chronic infections. These are the types of things that most pets run into that can be cured without any side effects of drugs or requiring any type of anesthesia. It is non-invasive. It is an FDA cleared and approved technology that is used currently in human hospitals as well as veterinary applications.
Now, some people listening to this might think of lasers and they'll think Star Wars, and you know, you have this wand and it cuts people and it kills them and does all
this.
That's
right, that's right.
Different types of lasers. What types are there?
Ah, excellent question. Lasers were first introduced from the technologies that were developed in late 50s, early 60s. They were...
So this isn't new at all?
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, the first lasers that were invented in 1962, which came into the first applications, the mystery around lasers was very much the attention of investigated scientists. And there was a landmark study by a Hungarian physicist who was interested in knowing whether a ruby laser would cause any type of cancer in animals. So what he did is he took mice, shaved their backs, and shined this laser, ruby laser.
And it truly is using
a ruby crystal
right,
to deliver a wavelength of 835 nanometers onto the backs of his test subjects. And he had another group of rats that were shaved that he just shined a flashlight, just a regular light on it. He found, over numerous treatments of about 20 treatments on these two sets of rats, that there was no harm to either set. There was no cancerous growths, but for some reason, the treated rats grew their hair back faster. And so he coined the term photobiostimulation. And that's where the origin of using lasers in therapeutic applications began. From there, lasers were refined, kind of like where we are with cell phone technology. They became more specific and more discrete, and so you can actually have powerful lasers which could be used in industry for cutting steel bars, for instance, or you can use more refined lasers to remove birthmarks, make incisions on skin without any bleeding, and sealing off nerve endings, that type of thing. So today, in this century, lasers have really become a refined tool for the surgeon, and the therapeutic laser that we're talking about today really represents about 25 or 30 years of research and very carefully controlled experiments that we've performed in university settings and clinics all across the world, really.
So, Brian, I think some of the listeners might think that, okay, I can use a laser to go ahead and cut the skin or to do whatever types of surgeries. They're not going to have bleeding because the laser cauterizes the vessel at the same time, so quicker healing. But the thought of using lasers, and maybe you can talk a little bit about cold lasers, something I've heard of, and how can that be used to cure an infection? How can that be used for a sprain or a strain? That really seems far out there.
Sure. The lasers used by surgeons, the CO2 laser that cuts tissue, that's the one that's most common to most practices. The therapeutic lasers have evolved, and the newer generation therapeutic lasers, class 4 lasers, are quite new to practices, and that just revolutionized. The results we're getting just revolutionizes the whole medical treatment of animals.
Okay, it's called cold. Is it a cold sensation, or it just doesn't produce heat?
Mike, I'll defer that to you. It might be better.
Well, I think it's important that the public understand that there are different types of lasers, and cold lasers or cold light laser therapy is a term that has been used for about 20 years, and these were lasers that were very low powered. They were powered by a couple of nickel cadmium batteries. It's kind of like a flashlight with a small spot, and they didn't create any heat when applied to the tissue, and so they were called cold. And that technology is similar to, let's say, a laser pointer, if you will, or let's say a grocery store scanner for barcodes. So these non-thermal lasers or cold lasers represents a technology that was introduced in the medical field, the healthcare field, probably in the 80s, middle 80s. But now the more powerful lasers are class 4 lasers. Have come on the market that are stronger lasers, but they're still safe and very can be used safely without any harm to the tissue and not present any pain.
So how does a laser help a sprain or a strain? I mean, that's below the skin, that's a muscle, a tendon, it's damaged, it hurts.
Let me take this.
All right, Brian.
The class 4 laser that we have has two unique separate wavelengths of light, two different lasers that are used at the same time. One laser has an effect on more of the gross tissue level to decrease inflammation. Okay, so it increases the vascular flow, vasodilation. It also increases the return, fluid returning out of the tissues. So
sometimes lymphatics get...
Right, lymphatic return is enhanced.
Okay, good, all right.
And the other beam has an effect directly on the nerves. So you get the reduction of swelling from one beam and the reduction of pain from the other, both simultaneously. What they've found over the years is we can actually take these two lasers, and the way they're combined already, the way they're synchronized, the way they work together, can be tuned to have a specific effect on the cellular level. Okay? So when we have injured cells, and we have an acute injury or long-term care injury, there's something happening where the cells are sending out mediators that chemicals the body responds to and says, hey, I'm hurting over here, I need something different, and the body reacts by increasing swelling and pain and all kinds of reactions to it. What the laser does in tissue, there's a whole cascade of different chemicals chemicals and everything else in control, but what we find, it just returns the cells to a more healthy basis, okay? It increases the energy level available to the cells, increases the hydration of the cells, the fluids moving, and the mediators we talked about moving across the membranes are controlled back to more of a healthy basis for the cell. So the injured cells now become healthy cells quite rapidly. The animal is less painful, has a chance to recover quicker, return to normal activity.
How long does that typically take? How many treatments, for instance, for a sprain or a strain?
Okay, the pain is almost immediate. Pain control is almost immediate. We normally do 6 treatments done every other day. We see the best effects start to kick in for inflammation. Actually, it starts within a few hours after the first treatment, but it takes about 3 treatments, over 6 days, to start to get the things back on track, back to healthy things. So it's pretty quick. What we found in arthritic dogs, and I have a 13-year-old golden retriever myself. That's
a poster child for arthritis.
Yeah. He started to get shy of stairs, and he didn't want to go get off the cold tile to go for a walk. And I treated him. His first 6 treatments, he started really acting like a puppy. And it lasted about 3 months, okay? So there's a kind of a loading dose that we do to get the tissues back to become healthy. And then, over time, they start to degrade a little bit. And then we do a periodic, depending on the severity of the animal's arthritis, periodic maintenance doses. And his is about every 3 months. Some dogs are pretty bad shape. It's usually about every 30 days that we do a single therapy, which when I say a therapy, it's an exposure to the energy of the laser, usually about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. It's very, very quick, and it will last a whole month.
So this could be great for the sports dog, the agility dog that's doing agility courses or fly ball, the working dog like the hunting dog or the police dog, but just like your own, just an everyday dog at home who's getting a little bit older.
We have quite a few customers that have the agility dog, and they get pretty beat up in some of those sports. I have, for example, a vet that has a lot of hunting dogs and a lot of people that hunt in her practice, and nothing worse than that loved dog that you've been hunting with for 10 years, and they're really starting to feel like they can't get out there anymore. So we've seen a lot of those turn around where the dogs are actually back out in the field doing what they love to do. So it's a pretty amazing thing to see how they're revitalized with this.
That's right. You can't really reverse the process of aging.
Shucks.
But you can make these older pets, these athletic pets, more comfortable as they get into the later years of their lives.
Well, I think I should buy one for the practice and start using it on myself. I love it. Well, I've been chatting right now with Mike Kim and Brian Godert of Cutting Edge Laser Technologies. Thank you, gentlemen, very much.
Thank you. Quite a pleasure. It's our own.
I am with Kent Cruz. He's a veterinarian and with Purina Care. And everyone's heard the name of Purina, but probably not Purina Care. And we're here at the California Veterinary Medical Association conference in San Francisco, California. Dr. Kent, thank you for being with the Cruz. Excuse me, for being with us. Tell us a little about what is Purina Care.
Well, Purina Care is Purina's version of pet health insurance. And as you're well aware, there are oftentimes situations where a pet has a very serious medical problem, and the veterinarian, as a veterinarian yourself, you realize how this works. You have a solution for that medical problem, but the client unfortunately can't afford to pay for the medical therapy, surgery, medicines, whatever might be required to take care of this pet.
And that's so sad, because there's something you can do, and they just go, I can't afford it.
Yeah. And you're forced into a decision. It's usually one of two decisions. Either you have to recommend a treatment that is less effective and consequently less expensive, which is not good for the animal, certainly, or that really unfortunate situation where the pet parent says, oh my goodness, I guess we're going to have to put it. And depending on the relationship, my best friend, my spouse substitute, my child substitute, whatever that relationship is with that pet, we're going to have to put that pet to sleep. We call that economic euthanasia.
And it's way too common.
And Purina recognized probably 6 or 7 years ago that the incidence of economic euthanasia in the country was way too high, just way too high. And the actual percentage of insured pets in the United States is really still very, very low, somewhere between 1 and 2%. As an example, in the UK, the percentage of insured pets is like 20 to 22%. So we're lagging way, way behind.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think there's been a lot of confusion on the part of veterinarians regarding pet health insurance. There have been some policies that have been pretty complex, difficult to understand, maybe some disappointments in terms of the reimbursements. And so I think veterinarians have sort of shied away from really strongly recommending or promoting pet health insurance to their clients. And so Purina decided to design a program, to decide a policy that was simple, comprehensive, and very easy to understand.
Sounds better than ours.
Yes. And first of all, to make it so that the client understood what it was that they were purchasing, the protection that they're purchasing for their pet, so they understood it fully. And secondly, so that they didn't have any disappointments when the time came that they needed to utilize the insurance. Of course, we always hope that they don't have a need to utilize the insurance, right? But in order to utilize insurance, they wanted to be able to understand what was going on, and they wouldn't be disappointed when the reimbursement came. And so we've tried to sort of fill that hole, so to speak, and create a policy that is, in fact, easy to understand and provides the protection that the clients need for their pets. And so that's what we're doing.
I think one of the things I always try to stress with pet owners, because I do like pet insurance and recommend it heavily, is that human insurance versus pet insurance, they're not apples to apples. How do they vary? What's the difference? The main difference?
Most of the time, human insurance nowadays, as we've certainly heard on the news relative to health plans in the United States, is some sort of managed care. And that presents complexity for the human patients, and it certainly presents disappointments for the doctors. The nice thing about pet health insurance is that it's an indemnity type program. It is very similar to car insurance. So there's no provider network that's involved.
They can go to whoever they want to.
They can go to whoever they want to, and if the veterinarian recommends, if the medical situation demands a specialist and the veterinarian recommends a specialist, the policy follows the pet, wherever that specialist may be and whatever the degree of specialty is, that pet is covered. You don't have to worry about whether the insurance is going to transfer over to another doctor.
So no gatekeepers.
No gatekeepers. Correct. And as a result, again, this is part of the complexity issue. If the veterinarian doesn't have to worry about, can make free recommendations based on the medical needs of the pet, and then the client can be assured that the expenses are going to be covered. And that's what's important.
There are a couple of different companies right now producing pet insurance. How would a pet owner decide what's going to be the best for them? What should they look for?
Boy, that's a toughie, because you said a couple. Actually, there are now 11 companies, okay? And this creates confusion, not only on the part of the pet owner, but on the part of the veterinarian when it comes time to make a recommendation, okay? So what the pet owner needs to look for, when they need to go to the website, and they need to look for the simplicity that we're talking about. Are the issues involving a policy, are they clear to understand? As an example, is it an 80-20 plan? Most of us know that an 80-20 plan from human medicine means that the insurance company is going to take care of 80% of the expenses, and the pet owner is going to take care of 20% of the expenses. The amount of the benefit is clearly defined under those circumstances. And then they need to look at limits. Okay, what are the limits that are designed into the policy?
Because veterinary medicine is getting expensive.
Yeah. Are there limits at the diagnosis level, as an example? Is there a benefit schedule that defines the limits that can be paid for diagnosis, or will it in fact pay 80% of the bill? Are there limits regarding hereditary problems? There are a certain number of problems that animals face and have a hereditary basis. And are there limits related to those hereditary problems? Or behavior problems. You know, behavior problems are one of the leading causes of pets ending up at the animal shelters.
Dogs barking, right? Cats scratching.
Yep. Fear biters, inappropriate eliminations, separation anxieties. All of these are psychological problems for the pet.
And insurance will cover that?
And insurance will cover it, yeah. But they need to find out. Not all all, insurance will cover behavior problems. And they need to ask the question, is behavior, if my pet develops a behavior problem, will it be covered? And so these are just a few examples. And so look at the limits. You know, there are usually dollar limits associated with the maximum amount that they will pay per illness oftentimes, or there may be dollar limits associated with how much we paid per year. And it's a difficult thing to sort through all this information. It really is difficult. But some companies have, on their website, they have a way to compare policies from one company to another.
That's a very plus, yes.
And that's one of the ways some websites do it, as you could possibly imagine. Purina has one of those websites.
How did I guess you probably did?
It's www.purinacare.com, and they can go to the Purina website, and they can see some of these comparisons, and they can see what the differences are. So that gives the client, the pet owner, a chance to really look at the differences between the policies and see what fits their budget and their needs best.
Well, this is wonderful. I am here right now with, he has the same last name as me. We spell a little bit differently.
Yeah.
So this is Dr. Cruz.
And Dr. Cruz.
And Dr. Cruz.
Yeah.
Here at the CVMA convention, and this is Purina Care. Thank you so much for being
with us. Thank you, Dr. Cruz.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and I am here at the California Veterinary Medical Association convention in San Francisco, California, going through the exhibit hall, and I'm seeing a product right now that seems very different and sounds very effective for a problem we see way too commonly in my practice, and that's going to be dental disease. So I am here with Lisa Hoover. She is director for Tartar Shield. Lisa, thank you very much for taking the time right now.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about Tartar Shield. How does it work?
Tartar Shield products prevent tartar buildup. They are only sold in a vet office because they are meant to go in conjunction with a professional dental cleaning, and they are preventative. So they will prevent tartar from forming after a cleaning has removed the existing tartar. We have a soft rawhide chew, which is an American beef hide that has been minced and ground. It's very effective. Clinical studies have shown it prevents tartar by over 50%. And it does have the Veterinary Oral Health Council seal of approval for tartar control.
I think that's really important because oftentimes a pet owner will go into a pet store and they'll see these various products. Oh, it's supposed to help get rid of the tartar on the teeth.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it just seems too spectacular because you see the before, these grungy teeth, and the afterwards, like, is this called truth in advertising? But the seal of approval, tell us a bit about that one.
The Veterinary Oral Health Council is an independent international committee that sets a protocol for the clinical studies that are done, because anybody can just say their product is effective, but if you have done the clinical studies to prove that it's effective, it means a lot more.
It works.
Yeah, it works. So we have that approval that we've had for a few years now, and it prevents tartar by over 50%. They are highly palatable, and they don't depend just on the mechanical action. It's safe because it is extruded rawhide, so it won't cause obstructions or break teeth. And we also have a cat treat. And the cat treats, they only need 10 to 15 a day, but each little treat is less than a calorie, so that's important.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of chunky kitties out there.
Right.
Now, some cats, and I have three cats, some of my cats like treats. One of my cats, I've tried everything and doesn't like it. Now, if I were to sneak this into the kitty food and it eats the cat food, and some cats seem to swallow the food and not chew it, would this still work?
It's coated with the active ingredient, and it does not depend on mechanical action to be effective. The active ingredient is malic acid, which is found in citric fruit, so it's a natural product. And how that works is, even if the cat swallows the pieces whole, when it meets the calcium in the saliva, it just causes it to dissolve and it's swallowed. So it just has to be in the mouth and meet with the saliva to be effective. It prevents tartar by over 40%. That's what the clinical studies have shown. And the malic acid also works as a palatant for the cats. You'd be surprised how many cats will come running when you just jiggle the bag after
they've
had it.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
Right. The dog biscuits also have the same active ingredient, which is malic acid. And then we have another product that is a tablet you drop into 8 ounces of water, and they're called Dentatabs, and they prevent tartar by 49% and malodor by 50.
It's and great. Doggy breath is very
right,
common.
Right. They are simple for you to use, and they're ideal for pets that might be overweight and can't have any calories with treats, or they are have allergic reactions to different things and different treats.
That's a great way.
Have a lot of allergies. Dogs will, or cats will use this product.
So my listeners have heard me talk about dental disease, how common it is, how serious it is. What's your take?
Well, it's very common because how many people brush their pets' teeth? And just if you can't imagine not brushing your teeth and going to work one morning, they do that day after day. So people love to give their pets treats, and they like the treats. So this is a simpler solution, and it will not cure, it will not take the place of dental cleanings, but it's a preventative to use.
So if there's already tartar on the teeth and it's those green slimy teeth, it's not going to get rid of the green slime.
Exactly. Nothing will get rid of the tartar that was already there. You need to have a dental cleaning done with your veterinarian, and then this prevents tartar, just like brushing your teeth every day would prevent that from forming. So nothing will get rid of existing tartar, but a professional dental cleaning.
Awesome. Well, Lisa, thank you so much. So Lisa Hoover with Tartar Shield, and this is a great product, it looks like. I'm going to try it out on my kitties at home and see how they take it. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.